Okay, so when Pius asked me to talk, I didn't know that he wanted to talk after me. So it looks a bit like a trap, so I don't know. He has put himself just talking after me. I don't know why, so well, he'll tell you maybe. So I want to talk to you about the work I did. Well, I was thinking about that in the last, let's say, 2 years. And it's a way to, an attempt to understand the properties of ytterbium, rhodium, 2 silicon 2 at criticality. So why this compound? Well, first because it's the one I know the best. And also because I think it can, well, it's very good in one sense. It's like it's very pure and one never reach a superconducting phase. So that the critical exponent can be extracted up to 3 decades in energy. So when I look at this compound, I know what is critical and what is not. So for a theoretician, it's very good. And I can at least extract 2 or 3 experimental exponents, which I believe are related to the quantum critical point or quantum criticality. And since I'm a theoretician, I say like, okay, now if it's a critical exponent, means there is a fixed point of Lagrangian. If I can produce one Lagrangian which will produce all the critical exponents of this system, maybe I'll make a progress. So among all these Lagrangians, what I want to tell you, I found only one. And while I'm ready to bet a bottle of champagne for anyone who can reproduce all the critical exponents with some other type, I would just say, of Lagrangian. But what he has in particular is there is... Yes, I know. Yes, I would be quite a king. But okay, what I want to say is the main idea and what is very important, I think, in this, the main idea is the new excitation is fermionic in nature. There's a new excitation at the quantum critical point, and it's fermionic in nature. And basically, it's a massless fermion which is dumped at the quantum critical point. So if anyone can reproduce the experimental data without a massless fermion at the quantum critical point, I buy a bottle of champagne. So I believe there's a new excitation. And it's a massless fermion. So by massless fermion, basically, I mean like once things are normalized, it can be short-lived too. Its lifetime can be short, but in a sense, it's kind of free. Its interaction with the other system once you have taken into account the self-energy are irrelevant. So basically, I will be able to describe, I will call it chi. And its wave function will be okay, and EK, so it depends on K, but EK can go to zero at some point in a phase space. A is the imaginary part of the self energy. For a spectral function, well, can put A over 2. Well, so far, nothing much. So I'll try to justify that. And first, I will go back to experiments and tell you which candidates I'll try to track. So ytterbium, rhodium, 2 silicon, 2. No, on part. There exists some surface or some shape. It's in 3D. I don't work in 2D. I don't believe the system is basically two-dimensional, so I'll try to have some strange properties in 3D.
Could we back up a second? I mean, physical motivation for this? I mean,
sure.
Electrons, you have conduction
electrons. Sure. I just want to give the main idea, so that the new excitation is fermionic in nature, and I believe that if you don't take an excitation which is fermionic in nature, you will never be able to track out these experiments. Maybe this is not the case, but at least, I don't know, I don't think it's bosonic in nature.
Is this excitation of an overlap with the electron? Or not? Does it carry charge?
Well, let me just go through it. So far, it will not carry spin, but it will carry charge. It's a fermion, so it carries charge. So in the model I have, it will carry charge but not spin. But you see, what I want to claim is what can happen with a new fermionic excitation is when it becomes massless, you get some kind of Fermi surface. It's not really a Fermi surface because it's damped, so this excitation is not necessarily infinitely long-lived at the point where the dispersion goes to zero. But you could have the dispersion go to zero on some weird part of the phase space, which is... Wait a second, let me just go to the derivation, okay? Because I just gave the ID. Now I go back and we'll straight out. Okay. Okay. So this is this compound, and it's doped with 5% germanium. So it's almost at the quantum critical point here. There is some weak singularity at 17 millikelvin. And what you observe as a function of applied very small magnetic field, so this is 17 millikelvin. So there is a Fermi liquid here. And here there's one kind of QCP. But one doesn't really know what is the order parameter. One believes it's probably incommensurate or anti-4-magnetic. So for the sake of simplicity in the model, I'll take it anti-4-magnetic. So they have been able to measure the resistivity from 10K up to 17 milli-K, and they show it's linear. So at the QCP, so now I'll take QCP, the resistivity is linear in T with very small rho zero up to, right, let's say, 17 milli-K. And from 10K. So I believe... Sorry? The critical field is roughly 17 millitesla. No, well, I mean, you just killed the antiformantic order, so the critical field has basically the value... I never know it's 1 tesla or 1.5. I always take 1 Kelvin equals 1 tesla. So... It's just a critical field needed to kill 17 millikelvin, so it's very, very small. So I believe in this exponent because it's in three decades and it's very pure compound. So my model will have to catch that. So rho is linear in T at the QCP down to very low energy. So I take it as a low energy property. Above 10K, above I don't know what happens, but from certain energy scale down to zero, I'll have to find linear in T, resistivity. So the second thing, so that's one thing that I want to catch. So the second thing is specific heat. So they have done measurements and showed that a specific heat coefficient, C over T, again at the quantum critical point. So this is again 10K roughly. So there is some kind of, it's a log-log plot. This log of T. So it has some kind of log, and below a certain energy scale, you see that the log goes up. Well, it's difficult to know whether this log is a tail or not, but if you cut here, this is 300 milli-K. If you cut here, and you hide that, you believe it's a log. But when you go to lower temperature, there is this kind of upturn, which basically goes roughly like T to the minus 1/3. So it's the second thing I want to catch, C over T, goes like T minus 1/3.
That's in a temperature that's much higher than the 17 millikelvin.
Yes, 300, yeah. So of course there can be some margin of error on this exponent, so 0.04, but for sure it's much less than the log, and it's less than 1/2 also.
That persists all the way to the lowest temperature?
Sure, Sure, at 17 millicaid, you see something like that. Yeah. Sure, up to 17 millicaid persists. At the con. Yeah, you get something like that at 17 millicaid. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, if you have the pure compound, if you have the pure compound as a TN of 70 millikay, and in that case the peak is much more pronounced. But you know, you have a very, very huge width of fluctuations from 300 to very low temperature, which is totally disproportionate with a ordering temperature, which is extremely small. Here. So the fluctuations, if I take this as a fluctuation, this probably goes something like that. So it fluctuates on all this region.
Does this 300 millikelvin scale show up in any other?
Yes, yes, yes. It shows in, for example, in CVT, in susceptibility.
CVT versus H also shows an 8.
Mm-hmm. So the minus 1/3 goes away up to here. So if you go into the Fermi liquid, it saturates slowly. So you will see in the Fermi liquid, you'll see it goes up and then it will saturate slowly till you don't see anything. So at a certain magnetic field here, you will lose the feature, which is roughly the equivalent of 300 millikay for in Tesla. Okay, so far so good. The third thing which seems to be important is there seem to be indication that something happened with the Fermi surface, or at least with the Hall constant in this compound. So for doing that, they took the pure compound now. So the pure compound, if you remember, I told you, so it was, I will put it here, ytterbium, rhodium 2, silicon 2, and Tn is 17 now millikay, so roughly 10 times more, a bit less, but 7-8 times more. So what they do is, now it's difficult to reach the QCP, so they use one field to track the quantum critical point, and then they put a field perpendicular to it to measure the Hall response. So the field perpendicular to, so one of the field will reach, will put the system at criticality, and the other field is very small, and then you track the Hall response by linear response, and you get a linear, a linear slope, and if they do that, they see some change in 1/RH. Let's be clear, as function of. So I don't remember how it is actually, because you know better than me. So this compound is a bit anisotropic. So they track the QCP, so they want the current to flow this way. So this is B-perp, B parallel very small, delta B, and they reach the quantum critical point. So delta B, it's in the C direction, and this is AB. Sorry, AB, and this is B, let's say, Z, B0. So with B0, they reach quantum critical point, and with delta, they put delta BC in that direction, and they measure the current flowing in the whole other direction. And then they have some RH, which is linear slope, and they have this 1/RH as function of B0. And they show that it goes like that. Different temperature. And at very low temperature, it seems to cross roughly following the Fermi liquid line. I'm not very quick, sorry, because I have lots of things to say. I'm still on experiments. Okay, so it's roughly, no, it's not really. At the beginning, it's a Fermi liquid line, and then it's something like that. But this is the inflection point. So you see, you can infer from that that there is a small number. You could interpret simply saying there is low number of particles on this region, high number of carriers on this other region. So low number of carriers and high of carriers. Of course, it's an experiment of transport on transport. So the question is, how far can we interpret that with respect to the number of charge carriers? But well, at least it shows something really happens close to the quantum critical point. So here it is, and now I would like to show what was the idea and how I implemented. Oops. No, you put that up. I'm not tall enough. It's almost impossible. Oh, thanks. So it's maybe a simplification, but I start with a Kondo-Eisenberg lattice model. So Kondo-Eisenberg. So just let's write it. HK plus HH. And HK is sum over K sigma. FK sigma so far simple. This is a Kondo coupling, which I'll take. So it's a mixed representation. I take K and I. I hope you'll excuse me for that. And the Eisenberg is some sort of AJ SI. SJ. So now the idea is to say that, one way of seeing the idea is to say that maybe at the quantum critical point, the weird properties of the system are due to the fact that the Kondo screening or the formation of the Kondo singlet is incomplete. By incomplete, I'm very vague. But what I want to say is that at least I know one model which has trouble to complete Kondo screening is if I take the bosonic representation for S, I will have really trouble to get a mean field theory which gets the Kondo screening. So I say, okay, let's be bold. Why shouldn't it be a right track? Yes. No, sorry. F electrons are conduction electrons, so which have a Fermi surface. Oh, yes. Sorry, I didn't see that. F equals C. It's a bad notation. Let me call them C everywhere. I think it's much better. So C are the conduction electrons. And S is a spin of impurities. So in case of ytterbium, you can have a big magnetic moment. But this system has impurities, which are due to the big atom, the ytterbium, which have spin and a huge magnetic moment. And when you do spin orbit, you can show that basically the moment on the ytterbium is J equals 7/2. Sorry, it's not vector. So from the ytterbium, you can show that J equals 7/2. And what you expect is there is some crystal field splitting so that you end up with a Cramer's doublet. And you can use a spin 1/2 Kondo. So this is the excitation corresponding for the last Cramer's doublet, this big S on the ytterbium compound.
Question out of ignorance. I mean, spin orbit interactions are large.
Yes, right? Yes.
So why does the Hamiltonian have SU2 spin rotation like that?
It's a simplification in a sense. You know, you have this big S, and you don't know how to screen this big magnetic, this big spin here. And actually, it's one of the open problems in all heavy fermion system, I believe, and especially in cerium. So what you believe is a crystal field will split the degeneracy of these energy levels, and you will end up with a Cramer's doublet. And here you'll have only one electron Cramer's doublet, so this, we believe it's this last electron is an isolate system which has spin 1/2. But of course, this is not, you know, you'll have to screen this big thing. It has 13 electrons to put in, and the screening will start, we know for the Condor screening start at high energy. So something totally different could happen. How do you screen each energy level? And so, okay, this is a pseudo spin. Yeah, but I don't work with a 7/2 pseudo spin. I work with s equal 1/2. Sure, but you know that Condor, it's still for me, it's a problem. I just want to address this question because for me it's an open question. You know, if the Condor screening starts at very high energy, I will have to address, you know, the competition between crystal field effect and screening of the high energy levels in this big pseudo spin. And this I think Miyake.
Single ion level in great depth, even okay. Exact
Well, I'm okay. Miyake claims there is some physics there. That's what I want to mention. And I give he has a point.
Do they get R log 2 or R log
1? Yes, you could have some precursors with some logs at intermediate energy. You could have some precursors of Condor screening, some logs appearing, and some
it's
weird features.
Experimentally, the Cramer, that the Schottky anomaly is at higher temperatures, and by the time you get down to this temperature,
well, John, can you tell us where is the next crystal field level?
A couple hundred kelvin away. You're doing this like series. You're making an approximation here that in this Cramer's doublet, there's only really a pseudo spin of a half, and it's identical to series, although the terbium is more complicated because you have 13 for it.
Yes.
But in the Cramer's doublet, call it a pseudo spin.
But then you use a part of the host in the cube.
Okay, if it's a couple, if the next crystal field level is a couple of hundred degrees above, I think you can use this scheme. But if it was 30 degrees above, maybe not. That's basically the idea.
There's some recent neutron experiments which indicate levels up at 20, 30 degrees above, so yeah. Probably okay.
Yeah,
it will
be
okay. Okay, so let's say it's okay. And now what I do is I represent the spin by bosons. So this will lead to me to use SPN or SP2, 2N or 2N, I don't remember. SP2 or SPN, I don't remember what you put for. I think it's SP2 equals SU2, if I'm fine with what I call here. So in order to do this, I have to implement the constraint on the bosons here. And what it gives, so this part has not changed. And here there is a bosonic part. So bosonic coupling, and here I will have a Lagrangian of that kind. So now it's coupling in different site. Sorry. Okay. And on top of it, I have the constraint on the bosons. So in the Lagrangian, when I use the Lagrangian formulation, I have to remember when I use the Lagrangian formulation that I will implement the constraint by Lagrange multiplier that I call lambda. So I have also, so far that's it. So what I do now is I decouple. In two channels, I will decouple this in the Condor channel with a field that I call chi. I think it's a dagger here. And I will decouple this, the field that I call delta ij. So, of course, this is engineered to capture very well the antiferromagnetic part of the the fluctuations, because the bosonic representation is well known to do that. But the Kondo-Bond state now is of fermionic nature. So in order to get the Kondo, complete Kondo screening, it would be more difficult. At least at mean field, I will not achieve this goal. But in a sense, it's what I want, because I claim maybe the Kondo screening is incomplete at the quantum critical point. So when I do the decoupling, HK gives H prime K, which is I sigma, Bi sigma, Chi dagger I, Fi sigma plus complex conjugate, minus 1 over JK, Chi dagger I, Chi dagger I. Sorry? Yes, FEC, sorry. And for the Heisenberg part, I decouple this way. With delta field. So it's SPN, so I'll get B dagger, B dagger. And again, the coupling field. So, if I succeed to push it up. Wow. Oh, yeah, it's just the fact that it has to be odd on the Q. So it's what happens when you...
What is it?
Well, it's a kind of superconducting decoupling here. I decouple... Sorry, I made a mistake here. I decouple that way. So when you do that... Oh, sorry. No, it's R. So Ri minus Rj, and here I have just put pi over A. Let's forget it. Well, no, it's just when I Fourier transform, when I will Fourier, well, it's just a phase which is on the bond, you know? Yes, it's a complex field. Here. Yes, actually, this is a phase of delta. So when I this is I, and the next nearest neighbor J, and I get this phase for each bond. This is modulus. Well, it's just a very usual SPN decoupling on the antiferromagnet in 2 or 3D. No, so far the phase has been frozen. So far it's just a decoupling with a field delta like that, and I'll treat it in mean field. So in mean field you see that your B dagger B. So if you Fourier transform, you get your field. K sigma B minus K minus sigma. B K sigma, B minus K minus sigma. And just decouple it at mean field. There is nothing. I decouple the Lagrangian admin field. This is delta Q, this is delta Q star, and this is minus omega plus lambda. And delta Q is just like this tight binding, it's just tight binding approximation in the B sector. So it's delta sinus QX plus sinus QY plus sinus QZ. That's it. Yes, yes. So I didn't, in a sense, I didn't take into account the fluctuations around the anti-four magnet. So you see, what happens is you have an anti-four magnetic phase, and here you could have fluctuations of the gauge field associated to delta. So I claim they are irrelevant anyway because the coupling to the electrons will be more important. So I believe this gauge field will do nothing compared to the other things. So what I did is I treat this admin field. So admin field, when you do admin field decoupling of this field, you have this order parameter here. And when you diagonalize this spectrum with these two spinons here, sorry, this is a dagger. So when you diagonalize it, you get the spectrum of the spinons goes as a frequency omega q, which goes like lambda square minus delta square, delta q square. And then you see that it becomes much less around 2 points, minus pi over 2, pi over 2. This is in 1D, so in 3D you have three things. Yes. I do nothing special for the anti-four magnet. I just treat it at mean field. At the fact that they have some massless mode here. Yes. This is just a tuning parameter, lambda. So when lambda... lambda is my Lagrange parameter, Lagrange multiplier. But in the toy model I will implement, I use it as a tuning parameter. It's a very crude approximation. In a sense, it's the one which is used in Arovas an hour back to treat mean field anti-four magnets. It's nothing more than that. I decouple tight bending and mean field. I get a spectrum of the dispersion of the spinons, which is linear in Q around 2 points, minus pi over 2, pi over 2. And I use lambda as a tuning parameter, saying that when lambda goes like delta, well, okay, it's... blah, blah, blah. So there is a threshold for lambda as function of big delta, so that it becomes massless. So when the spectrum becomes massless, I claim I've reached the quantum critical point. So this is lambda, basically. As far as anti-four magnetism is concerned, lambda is a tuning parameter, and when it becomes massless, I have reached with the quantum critical point. So the only thing it implements is some massless bosonic excitations, for which the spinons are linear in K. So this set, I think it's the most elementary thing I needed, the quantum critical point. Of course, I could have much more complicated things, but first it's in 3D, so I don't take much risk, I think, because in 3D, the effect of gauge fields, I don't think they are so drastic. What I wanted is a massless mode to couple my fermions to. Sorry?
In the original Slate boson scheme, lambda basically tunes the position of the F level.
What do you mean? In the original Slate boson position, you represent the spin by fermions.
Right.
So now, you know, the spin carry also the charge. Here, my spin are spinons, they are bosons, so do they carry charge? They carry charge from gauge theory. This has to be taken into account. But in the usual formulation, it's a fermionic representation of the spin, and the bound state is a boson. So when the bound state condenses, you hybridize the two bands. And when it doesn't condense, the two fluids are separate, but you cannot say anything. So what I'm doing here is I'm looking at the region. So the usual is very nice to describe this part because you have the two bands which hybridize. But what I want is to describe this region here. So the claim is that in this region, up to the quantum critical point, this set of variables with a bosonic spinon and a fermionic bond field is a good set of variables. So basically, if it's a good set of variables, I will be able to find a model which captures all experimental data I've told you about. So that's a claim that at least up to the quantum critical point here and above, actually, apart from the Fermi liquid phase, this is a good set of variables. Of course, I will never be able to describe the Fermi liquid with such a set of variables, which is free. There's no color. Well, anyway. No, it will be much simpler than that. I don't believe the gauge does anything to this problem, frankly. Maybe it will, the gauge field, okay, let's put it. The effect I want to look at are what I would call zeroth order, linearity, resistivity, upturn in specific key, change of Fermi surface volume. It's kind of zeroth order. So I claim that the new excitation is needed to capture the zeroth order effect. Now, of course, I will not be able to link with this part of the phase diagram. And if I want to do that, I'll have to do a more involved theory invoking gauge field, constraining my phi, counting my degrees of freedom, etc.
No, I mean, the Fermi liquid, I think, is going to be the confined phase of the gauge field. But even at the critical point where the gauge field is not confining, fluctuations are going to be scattering.
Yes, I just say they are irrelevant compared to what is coming now. Well, and actually, if they are fluctuating, actually, what do you want? If it's a bosonic gauge field, you will never get this experimental data. It's not enough. You just think, you just sit down for 2 hours and take a model in 3D with a boson gauge field around this kind of fluctuations here. And frankly, in 3D, you know, what do you want? You will get linearity, resistivity, specific heat with an upturn. It will never be enough. You have to do something drastic. The gauge is not enough to have this data by itself. You know, in 2D, a gauge theory with interacting electrons, this kind of gauge theory in 2D would probably give sigma going like omega to minus to 2/3. So maybe C over T goes like T minus 1/3. In 3D, no way. No way I get this kind of upturn. So either you say it's all...
They don't know.
No, but it's not a lattice gauge theory I'm talking about. If you have itinerant electron and you couple to matter, you have this kind of U1 gauge theories that we have for the Hubbard model. We know it's totally generic what they give as a self-energy. In 2D, they give everything hot. In 2D, they give sigma going like omega 2/3. So C over T goes like T minus 1/3. And in 3D, they give sigma goes like log of omega. And so C over T, I think is log. No, sorry, omega log omega, sorry. Yes, there's omega in front. So if you want to say that everything is 2D, fine. But this is absolutely generic, this exponent. I say cannot be that, you know, everything is 2D. This compound is three-dimensional, at least for the transport of the electrons. And thus, I think it has no chance to work, this gauge theory. You have to do something more, and something very drastic. Okay, I didn't say anything yet. Okay, so far I didn't claim the main idea. So far, I just don't touch the gauge and do it in mean field. I have massless field for the spinons. Now I will work on the chi, and it's where I do something really drastic. So I believe everything drastic here will come from this chi. So the idea is the Kondo effect is incomplete, but the chi will become massless at the quantum critical point. So it will acquire a surface where it has some kind of zero dispersion in a k-space. And on top of it is not a real field, but it's kind of virtual excitation. It will be done, so it will be short-lived. So that's what I'm doing. So basically what I'm saying here is the chi...
It seems like chi would be coupled
to the same gauge field. Yes, it is coupled to the same gauge field. It is. So what I'm doing here, in a sense, to give you a physical idea, what I'm doing here is, in a sense, I'm doing a valence kind of fluctuations, a valence fluctuations on the chi field. So what I claim is, if you take the one impurity model, you have two regimes. You have the Kondo regime, and you have the valence fluctuation regime, or mixed valence regime. So here I will do the same, but with not the same kind of parameter. It's before introducing gauge field. So let me give the analogy, just to let people understand what I do on chi. Well, this is pretty. Look, it cannot be explained like that in 2 seconds. Okay. I just want to make the analogy. Here in my Lagrangian, I have B dagger sigma dito B sigma plus C dagger sigma dito sigma C sigma plus H0, which is the sum of K. Minus 1 over JK, K dagger chi, plus B dagger, chi dagger, CK sigma. If you take the Anderson model, now what you have is H equals H0 plus ED, ND up, ND sigma. So now I have a D electrons here, with some fermions D, which fluctuates on the big impurity, and I have U, ND up, ND down, plus sum over K, VK sigma, C dagger K sigma, D sigma. So you see the analogy in the Anderson model. I have one fermion on an impurity which carries a spin. I have the electrons, and my coupling, my hybridization is bosonic. Here, what I have is I have a boson carrying the spin, coupling to the electrons, and my hybridization is fermionic. In the two cases, I have two fermions and one boson. And I claim that the energy level of my fermions follow the same pattern. So in the Anderson model, I have the Kondo limit when ED goes to zero. And I have mixed valence when ED is small to zero, but not exactly zero. Here, it's the same will happen. So I have a field here. It is damp, but it has a mass. So what I claim is in the Kondo regime, the mass goes to zero. JK goes to infinity. So in the Kondo regime of this model, same as ED goes to zero, like here 1 over JK goes to zero. But here, I claim it's an analogous of the mixed valence for the bond state. So I will work in the regime where the mass is zero on part of the Fermi surface and then non-zero on another part of the Fermi surface. So I'm playing with this mass. It's not totally Kondo. You know, it's kind of fluctuating around Kondo. So, but...
Chi field has an outcome surface,
this is one impurity, just to give you an analogy. So for one impurity, everything is flat. And if you do look at RG, if it's antiformatic Kondo, so it's EK, so it's 1 over JK. Everything is flat. For one impurity, everything is flat. So if I look at Kondo, if JK is positive, I start negative, and I reach the Kondo regime where this mass goes to zero. If it's ferromagnetic Kondo, so this is antiferromagnetic Kondo, this is ferro, I start with something positive, and I go up to infinity. So, you know, if the idea is the Kondo effect is incomplete, now I will put a lattice, this will acquire dispersion. And the idea is for this new field, there will be some region in K-space where it's mass left and some region where it's mass full. So in a sense, what I assist to is a formation of a band, a new band, which is this K-field. But it's not really a band because it's damped. It has to be damped everywhere. But in a massless field, which appears there. I don't think what will protect it. It will be coupled to many things. It has to be damped. You see the formation of.
Space,
Well, it's a good question, Matthew. If you can show me it's not damped, I'd be very happy actually myself, but I believe it will be damped. Because you see, it's coupled to too many things. It's coupled to fermions. Look, it's coupled to massless spinons, it's coupled to massless fermions. First, it will become itinerant, for sure. There is nothing which can protect the locality. And the damping, okay, if you can show me there is something which protects the damping of this field, I'm happy, but I believe it will be damped. Sure, 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 sure. But here I did something a bit different. I just made some assumption on the Chi to find all the experimental data, and I still didn't have time to present that. But you know, the idea, at least I think the message has passed, is the main idea is this field becomes massless, and through the phase diagram it is evolving. So you see, I believe in the Fermi liquid phase, the field is not a good quantum number anymore. So what happens is, I believe, you reach the fixed point as if it was a Fermi liquid. So in the Fermi liquid phase, it's flat and it's massless. So I mean, throw it away. So if I now look at the evolution on the Fermi liquid phase, how can I, maybe there. I just put the evolution. Oh, sorry. So I believe here on the Fermi liquid phase, as far as my new field is concerned, let's say I call it E chi, it's flatter than zero, meaning that I cannot say anything about this field. But I believe somewhere here, well, okay, let's make this assumption. I'm not sure I believe it, but somewhere here, the dispersion acquires some zero on part on Fermi surface and some bandwidth that I call D. So, you know, in a sense, I have to go from here to there. Then it has two things. It has to stretch on and become very flat. So D has to go to zero and it has to stretch on. So the idea was that in the middle, while it is going from here to there, it develops some singularities. So there is some part, you know, where around at the Fermi surface, it starts to become more and more local, like here. And what I would say is, okay, and it's where there is huge amount of fine-tuning, that there is some part that around the Fermi surface, the velocity vanishes on part of this Fermi surface. So if the velocity vanishes, when you go from this to that, well, again, it's not really a Fermi surface because I believe the field is damped. But on the part of the dispersion, the velocity vanishes. So that's the fine-tuning is that for this field, okay, I will put the damping, the marginal damp, as marginal as I can. So I will put omega log of omega plus I omega. This was the most marginal damping I could find. I'm not so sure it plays a role. Minus VFK. And VF is vanishes on part of the Fermi surface. So on part of the Fermi surface, I have AK cubed, which is basically Van Hoff singularity. So what we can do now, it's very simple. If you believe something of that kind can happen, and you put a Van Hoff singularity in this new field, whose Fermi surface is always hot, but this is a singularity now is in the dispersion of the field, then you can capture the experimental data.
That's fundamental now?
Sure, completely. Totally fine-tuned with huge fine-tuning. But it's not even trivial. Even if you put that, it's engineered to capture the upturn. So basically what I had in mind is what can I do to this field to capture the upturn? To the boson gauge theory, I believe I can do nothing except putting everything 2D. To this field, well, it's the only thing I found to do. But what is nice, it is also capture the linear resistivity, which is not trivial. You know, it could also give some resistivity with another power. So this model has both the upturn and linear resistivity, and basically most of the experimental data have the exponent going on through this thing. And also, this is a model, every model which tackle the formation of the Kondo singlet will have a change of permissive phase volume.
How many parameters do you have to tune to make the KQ appear?
Well, you form a band, infinite number. You form a band, so, you know, you form a permissive phase, so, you know, I make some assumption that there is a Van Hoff singularity at the quantum critical point due to the formation of this mixed valence permissive phase.
It's much more than a Van Hoff singularity.
No, it is a Van Hoff singularity, not on the entire permissive phase, on the line.
Is the correct relationship between the Q to the minus one third and the KQ?
Yes, this is engineered. Okay, so this is an exercise, and in a sense, maybe it shows two things. There is two things. Whether I believe in the fine-tuning is something else, but at least it shows what you have to do to capture experimental data if you believe in them. And just to capture, you know, the linear anti-resistivity and the T1 third for the specific kit going together, I found only one model, and it's this one. You know, if you put something else, you will not capture this. Just these two quantities, you will not capture at the same time.
But is that a statement that you're trying to think there's no other way of doing it, or is it just one way?
No, it's just. I claim it's very difficult. And if you look at this, you know, it shows the amount of things you have to do. You know, or you can do something even more drastic. I mean, what Chimiao C does is even more drastic. You know, it has some totally local mode sitting there. So any other scenario will be even more drastic, I believe.
Philosophically, we're looking for the final explanation of what's going on in the material.
Mm-hmm. Let me finish. Yeah, sure. Look, I was just about to say that. So can I just summarize? So I summarize. On the first side, I would claim it's an exercise which shows you how difficult it is to capture just two experimental data on this compound. This is a very highly fine-tuned model, which I believe so far captures everything I could measure, which was critical. Not two, but all of them, basically. The Grünheisen parameter is going fine. You know, everything goes fine. It's weird. So, of course, you see the amount of fine-tuning it requires. But behind, I believe, and this, that's why, you know, I pushed for this, and I still want to present this idea. I believe the main idea, the idea that the new excitation is fermionic in nature, and maybe what you assist is some kind of formation of a band, of a dispersion, similar dispersion, which is analogous to mixed valent, but for the bond field here. I believe the main idea has lots of chance to work, and at least has not been explored enough to say it doesn't work. It's really a new path which opens possibilities because this field is fermionic, it can fluctuate, it can acquire fermi surface, it can acquire a huge amount of massless modes around the place. So okay, that's 2-4, the conclusion. Yes, you get that, but it's less relevant than that's why the Van Hoff singularity is there. The Van Hoff singularity is a singularity which dominates everything. So what I claim is on the bosons, this singularity creates sigma b, which goes like omega one third. And on the fermions, at the hot lines, it creates sigma f, goes like omega two third. So if you assume the Fermi surface doesn't move, the singularity dominates, and when it couples back to the spinons and fermions, it creates a huge damping, which is much bigger than omega log omega. Of course, omega log omega and the gauge field will be there. But also here, that's why I put omega log omega, because I said there is omega log omega everywhere, so if I have to damp this field, let's do it, you know, without too much input on the damping here. There are logs in the Kondo, it's marginal damping. But the transport actually comes from this part. So what I did is this field was engineered to carry the entropy, and the whole Fermi surface is hot, so also it's kind of a phantom Fermi surface, but which carries entropy. So this carries the upturn, And the linearity comes from that. You can understand it because at the hot lines, for the F fermions, you know now it's very highly damped with omega 2/3 and the width is T 1/3. So you see, what I also like in this model, the third thing I like, I would say, is it's something which is in between the spin fermion model with hot and cold Fermi surface, and it has retained kind of a locality. So VF is vanishes on the on part of the Fermi surface of my new field. So it has retained some kind of locality. Because this vanishing on part of the Fermi surface capture, I mean, the local information that we have in this Lagrangian. But I believe to put just a totally local mode as Chimiao wants to do is too drastic. So it's also something I like in this model, it's in between. What I don't like, and like what everyone says, is a huge amount of fine-tuning. I couldn't find a simpler way of putting things. So, but first, yeah, this avenue looking at this new bond field and this link with Gage mixed valence, I think it's interesting. And also, yeah, when you look at experiments, you see there are some hints for locality, but you have to do something to this local mode. If not, it would create some entropy, so you have to destroy it in a way. So Chimiao wants to destroy it by damping, if I understand it well, or damping it. Or I don't really know how he destroys the entropy of his mode. Maybe interaction with the other field creates some damping. So here it's totally different. It says like it's not totally local. It's just, you know, the Van Hoff singularity is just the ghost of this locality. So only on part of Fermi surface velocity vanishes. So it's really in between spin. It's still a spin fermion model on the weird kind. The transport is coming from spin fermion, hot spot, cold spot. So, okay.
Thank you very much. And stand by your creation. We're going to do a picture for posterity.
Oh, no.